ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name is Matt Brand. Welcome to the Country Hour on a Friday lunchtime. We have got lots on the show this afternoon, including an update on the spread of fire ants across eastern Australia.
These super pests stand to inhabit at least 97% of this country, and they're projected to cause more damage than cane toads, camels, foxes and feral pigs all combined.
Well, that doesn't sound good. You'll learn more about that soon. Also this afternoon, there are a few fires in the top end causing some concern, so I'll have a good chat to Bushfires NT in just a moment. But before any of that, let's go to Catherine.
When you're smack bang in the middle of the territory.
The Catherine Show, it is on today. It's a public holiday for those in town, and I trust they've all headed to the showgrounds. Our Catherine-based rural reporter, Christine Schindler, is there. Whereabouts have you set yourself up there, Christine?
I have set myself up directly behind the photography shed. I found a little bit of shade, and there's a bit of a Devonshire tea stall right next to me. I can smell sausages. I can smell cows. I can smell... I can see the ADF band just setting up right now, so that might come through some tunes soon.
Well, we always like a bit of music on the Country Hour, so if the ADF strike up a good Waylon Jennings tune, we'll just play it. We'll just play it as is.
Yeah, why not?
I trust it's a beautiful day. I've got here Catherine expecting a top of about 30, 31.
Oh, it is absolutely magnificent of a day. You know those beanies that they sell that, you know, you can move the little ears? I don't think really anyone's going to be selling very many of those because of it's just not the weather. Certainly the slushies, I think, are going to sell out pretty quickly. That's that's going to be my next go-to for sure. type of weather.
I've got the Grand Parade. It starts a bit past 1 o'clock this afternoon. But what's happening on that main arena right now as we go to air?
Oh, they're setting up for the main parade now. They've got some seats out. I can't quite see where the competitors are going to, but I'm going to spot them soon, I reckon.
All right, let's keep it rural. Take me to the cattle pavilion. What is going on in the world of beef at Catherine?
Look, ADF just hit up a tune.
Is it Waylon?
Oh, it's not too much Waylon yet. I've really enjoyed spending a lot of my time this show in the cattle pens. I've been chatting to a bunch of local high school students who love their cattle, calling them love bugs and letting me pat them and get to know them. But one pretty magnificent person I managed to meet was Dakota Goff, and she is the National Rural Ambassador, but she's also a pretty prolific cattle judge. So I might just play that interview.
So in the cattle ring today, there's been a few attributes that have really shone through, and uniformity across the lines is one that's sort of really stood out, especially in the progeny classes we've just seen. In our heifer classes, in our bull classes, you know, as I said about that young bull that actually won supreme, beautiful soft bull, like it's very, very hard to come across such a young bull with tremendous softness and length and depth, and just presence in the ring and tracks really well and shows that he's there. Like your eyes automatically draw attention to him, and that's ultimately what you want in an animal. You want people to not be able to take their eyes off them. Obviously that comes with structural correctness, that comes with depth of body, that comes with depth of muscling. Now, as we've seen today, there's actually tremendous length throughout all of these animals, and a lot of depth of body that we can see. So overall, what I've seen so far has been quite good in the breed standard.
Yeah, and you've been to a number of other shows judging. How does this compare to them?
Obviously, going ahead with... being in other shows and stuff like that, you're judging a lot of other breeds. You're not sort of just doing Brahman. Like, we are a beef state, we are predominantly Brahman, and for me that sort of stands out. There is a few attributes that we sort of lack up here, which I think could really be repurposed and reformed with selective breeding and selective genetics. So I think that's something that we're really going to have to watch up here.
And I noticed there's a lot of the CDU high school students out here. I know you gave them a little bit of a course in judging a couple of weeks back. Can you tell me a little bit about how you think they fared and how they've progressed?
Look, watching these kids from when I actually done the school with them, I can definitely see a massive improvement just in their confidence alone. You know, I have been told today that I'm much more intimidating when I'm on the job, apparently, but you know, they haven't shown it. They've been really confident, and I've been amazed on how well their animals are leading from what I've seen 2 weeks ago, you know, and how calm they are coming into the ring. 2 weeks ago, they were, you know, big ball of nerves, and it's lovely to see that these animals are really sort of tracking out and making them and presenting them beautifully. And I really admire that they're giving it the best go.
And this year is the Catherine Show's 60th year. How long have you been coming to the show?
So I've been coming to Catherine Show for the past 3 years. I moved up here in 2023, and that's sort of when it started. This is a great promoter for the 60th anniversary. We've seen a drop off in our cattle since about 1980, and to see it look like this year, you know, that's a credit, because, you know, in the last 3 years we've seen it expanding more and more with each year. And, you know, as I said, looking ahead to 2026, you know, it's going to be amazing to see how this really develops and takes hold.
It is the show. Is there anything you're hoping to get to this weekend?
I'm actually hoping to go and see a couple of the storeholders and stuff like that, and talk to some of the breeders up here about their cattle and about their genetics and possibly some products and stuff that we can start implementing. So I'm really looking forward to getting around and actually having a chat to people and seeing where they're at in their business side of things and how we can maybe implement some things to improve.
That is Catherine Cattle Judge Dakota Goff speaking to Christine Schindler at the Catherine Show, which is on today. It's on tomorrow as well. As mentioned there by Dakota, lots of young people getting involved in the cattle section there at the Catherine Show, which is just fantastic. Young guns like 13-year-old Jackson Wershing, who had a chat to Christine while he was tending to his bull, a bull called Underbelly.
I'm Jackson, and we're just at Catherine Show, showing our cattle. But, yeah.
And what are we looking at here?
Bull, his name is Underbelly, 33 months old. Yeah, he's a pretty cool bull. He has his ups and downs, but yeah, he's pretty cool.
And how long have you been looking after Underbelly?
About maybe 4 weeks or something, I think. Yeah.
Just leading up to the show?
He's been, I think this is his second year, and yeah, just trying to get myself used to him and all the other cattle.
Are you going to be showing him?
Yeah, I'll show him on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah. And have you shown bulls before?
Nah, this is my first time.
What are you looking forward to?
Hopefully getting a few ribbons.
Can you just describe Underbelly to me?
Oh, he's got a pretty good temperament. He's pretty big bull. Oh, yeah, he's pretty cool. Up near 700 kilos.
Yeah, cool. Mm. And you're volunteering at CDU. Can you tell me a bit about that? What do you do there?
I'll just go just for show cattle. Just go out there and help out. And yeah, so I've got 3 cows with me to lead. But yeah, so that's pretty cool out there.
Any tips or tricks for prepping the cattle?
Oh, just wash them as best you can, and make them look really good for the judges. But yeah.
What do you think the judges are looking for?
Just their structure and, because you want a good masculine head on a bull and, just think little things that judges like to see on them. You want them to be nice and clean.
Do you have anything you're looking forward to this show? Any prizes or apart from the cattle?
Oh, just be good to go on a few rides and, yeah, have a bit of fun with your mates.
That is 13-year-old Jackson Wershing. looking forward to hanging out with his mates at the Catherine Show. Our Catherine-based reporter, Christine Schindler, is there this afternoon, right near the main arena. Christine, can we go and look at some chooks?
Absolutely.
I'm hearing some seriously big numbers this year in the poultry pavilion.
Yes, absolutely. I had to check it out. There was a rainbow chicken there, a rare breed apparently, never seen before. But it was there in its flesh. And when I was there, I caught up with Craig Freen, who is a bit of a grandmaster of the poultry stewardship here at the Catherine Show. And he told me that, you know what, Catherine Show, it's doing pretty well for itself in terms of chickens, and it looks like it's even beating Darwin Show.
So this year, chicken, the numbers in the shed are up again this year. We have 225 birds this year compared to 212 from last year. I think poultry in Northern Territory and I think in Catherine is growing in popularity, and I think that's driven a little bit by the current situation we've got with eggs and the availability of eggs. It's good to see that poultry is continuing to grow in Catherine. And the best part about that is for the last 4 years we've beaten Darwin. So this is Catherine's the biggest poultry show in the Northern Territory at the moment.
Well, there you go, biggest poultry show. And there's like an incredible array of birds here, from like speckly small ones to the kind of the beautiful white feathered ones. Can you tell me a bit about your kind of most comical, wonderful birds that you can see here?
The most comical birds is owned by a local, and every year, for the last couple of years, she has tie-dyed her chicken. I shouldn't say literally, but she has dyed her chicken. So this year she is rainbow. Last year she was hot pink. If you want to have a bit of a giggle at a comical chook, come down and have a look at the rainbow chicken. But apart from that, we've got some regulars in here. The big brown leghorns that we're looking at the end of the road down here, they're always popular. They're a very big, proud, spectacular bird. Arikanas, so they're commonly referred to as the Easter egger, so they're gaining popularity in the Northern Territory. But I think what surprised me most this year is last year we had five Rhode Island whites, large birds, in the shed, and any white bird looks spectacular. But this year there's actually 22, and they are shiny white. It's a sight to see.
They're definitely beautiful animals, that's for sure, and the rainbow one kind of catches your eye. And you've got some birds in here, don't you? Can you tell me a bit about them?
We do. So both the wife and I compete at the show and have done for over a decade now. So my birds, I'm a Rhode Island man, so my birds are predominantly Rhode Island. The wife is Sussex. And then we've got some waterfowl. And this year we've actually competed with turkeys. I do own the Rhode Island whites, or some of the Rhode Island whites. So for me, they've been a five-year project at this point to actually get them to a stage where they're actually strongly competitive. And this year, they really did that. They competed really well. They showed really well. Chooks have their own personality, and they are little quirky creatures. We go out and we look at them and we watch them and stuff like that to work out what's going to be show-worthy and what hasn't really made the grade. We always have a good sprinkling of birds in the shed. And it's good to see that there's some birds that we haven't seen here before. There's some chocolate Orpingtons, which are new to Catherine. There's some Plymouth Rocks, which again are new to Catherine. And I think that the diversity in poultry in the shed is also again attributed to people getting involved in poultry, and whether that be because they want to be involved in poultry or they think that they just want some chooks for the backyard to lay some eggs. So I think the thing I look forward to the most when I steward the shed is to see what's new, who's got what, the new birds that are in Catherine, and the new faces, like the Sally. So Sally's a first-time exhibitor. She actually won bird of show with a Plymouth Rock. So again, a bird that we don't normally see in the show, and a first-time exhibitor. It's great to see. Don't get me wrong, I show to compete to win. But I also love sharing it around and welcoming new people to the world of poultry.
And it is 60 years. We're celebrating 60 years at the Catherine Show. Is there a particular show that sticks out, or a particular memory you want to share?
I think for me, I think it's it'll be the first time I got actual bird of show. You know, and I was super happy because I'd actually, the gentleman who got me into poultry, I actually beat him. So I got bird of show, he got reserve bird of show. So not only was it satisfying to know that I was on the right track, but it was also satisfying to know that I'd beaten my mentor.
What do you think people, you know, when they come in here and they leave, what do you hope they're taking away?
Look, I just hope that they enjoy it. You know, look, I know the work that goes into the Catherine and District show itself, and the poultry section. And my takeaway for the people that actually walk through here today is that they walk away and go, I enjoyed that. That was good.
That is Craig Freen from the Poultry Pavilion speaking to Christine Schindler, who is at the Catherine show this afternoon and has changed locations. Tell us where you are now, Christine.
Oh, I am standing in the Produce Pavilion and I'm standing next to three beautifully huge pumpkins.
All right, this is the news we need on a Friday lunchtime on the Country Hour. Catherine takes this giant pumpkin comp pretty darn seriously. Tell us, who's won in 2025?
Oh, look, number three. Let's start number three. Third prize goes to Lachlan Dingle for his pumpkin, which comes in at 111.5 kilos. Second prize goes to Heather Dingle, which comes in at 124.5 kilos. And the winner is Heather Dingle again, 135 kilos. These pumpkins are huge. Now, I have it on good understanding from Heather herself. She couldn't be here, but she is a bit of a firestorm herself. I think she's volunteering. I walk past her and she's in the cakes, selling CW cakes, and then she's trying to find a judge for the rum, the home brews. So she's been a bit hard to track down, but she tells me that this year wasn't quite as good as last year, unfortunately, because of the rain that came through. There was a bit of mildew in the
patch. That's right. Well, Catherine got, what, nearly 200 millimetres at the back end of May. So disaster.
Absolutely.
For the giant pumpkins.
But what's more interesting is this newcomer who came in third prize. That's Lachlan Dingle. And Lachlan is Heather's 16-year-old son. Now, as I understand, Heather's been taking away first prize for a number of years with her giant
pumpkin.
She's
a legend of the pumpkin game, yes.
It is, and she's got someone nipping at her heels here, and apparently she was telling me that the competition was pretty fierce between her and her son. She thought that they wouldn't make it because they would sabotage each other, but I guess here the pumpkins are. They're beautiful, and well done to both of them.
So the Dingle family have taken out first, second, and third. Is that what
Absolutely,
you're telling us?
Absolutely, yep.
Whoa.
Yeah. There is one other pumpkin here which got first, but that was for the best decorated giant pumpkin.
Ah, right.
Yes. And it's a beautiful little pumpkin. It's got a picture of a cow and a little chick and a dog, and it's got some little stars and some butterflies on it. So I mean, good work to her. That was Piper Fenning.
I am intrigued. I would assume Heather would have had to have grown multiple vines. You couldn't produce 200 kilo pumpkins off the one vine. Surely.
Yes.
Surely. Anyway, maybe, you know, well, I'm just worried she's not coming onto the Country Hour because she just wants to keep all the secrets, all the giant pumpkin secrets to herself.
Yes.
I've got here in my notes, Catherine still has a long way to go to beat the biggest giant pumpkin ever in the Northern Territory. That title still remains to the good Dr. Daniel Campbell, who in 2021 grew a pumpkin at the Royal Darwin Show, 281 kilos, is still the heavyweight champion of pumpkins in the Northern Territory. Anyway, Catherine's show today, and lots happening in that horticultural pavilion, I trust, Christine.
Yeah, right next to the horticultural pavilion is the plant pavilion, which is looking lush and green and wonderful. And I managed to track down a man who was taking photos of each of the plants, and it turns out he was a judge. And, let's hear what Gary Beaumont has to say.
I'm Gary Beaumont. I've been around for a long time doing the... been a steward and a judge for quite a few years, and... it's basically my whole background is plants and photography. So hence I'm in the plant pavilion with a camera.
And you were judging this year, were you?
Yeah, I've judged there the last few years. Some of them are just spectacular. You know, the one particular, the staghorn fern that's grown on a piece of PVC pipe, like some of them are just hard to grow. And this thing has obviously been growing quite happily for a long time in the right conditions, and the grower has done a beautiful job with it.
Yeah, and what stands out to you about it?
Oh, it's just the health of the plant, the symmetry where it's actually grown right the way around it, so it's been grown in a good spot, getting even light, or they've taken it out, you know, through the year and moved it so that it's going to get equal light all the way around it. And it's it's just very very eye-catching, and I doubt that there would not be one person that walks through and would not say, that is a plant I'd love in my collection, hence the Grand Champion tag on it.
And let's go down here a little bit. Here we have the decorative boots. Can you tell me a bit about what caught your eye?
In the boots, the boots, because predominantly they're done by children, and you know that there's going to be some disappointed children, and there's some that have put so much effort in. And like the one that did win the first prize is a boot. It's got a little scene in the front of it and a little family scene. It's then got fairy lights around. It's got a pineapple growing out of the top of it. And, it's got a little flyer on it which says the K-Town 60th show, which is what they're celebrating this year. That was sort of one of the things that sort of really did it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And speaking of the K-Town 60th show, how many shows have you been to?
My first one was 1970.
And what was it like back then?
Yeah, it was okay. It certainly wasn't as commercialised as it is now. It was more, I think then when you came in, like, and at that time, like, I was only 15 or something, I think, and you come in because you're not really interested in the pavilions, you're more interested in the going down Sideshow Alley and getting on the go-karts and all that sort of stuff. One show I missed, we were away one year, went on holidays, heavens to Betsy, you know, imagine going away at showtime.
Yeah, and how did you become a judge? What brought you into stewarding and judging?
My interest was always in plants, but then what happened is when we started having children, my wife stayed at home looking after the children, so we got there and I started up a little bit of a background nursery, and so I was a steward, and we did that for 8 or 10 years, and then the last few years, they get there and they find it was hard getting judges or people that sort of have a interest in it for a lot of the stuff that's grown locally. And yeah, they bring in people from, they've brought in people from south, and they had no idea on tropical plants. So now I get the easy job, the judge.
That is Judge Gary Beaumont. He's been going to the Catherine Show since 1970. Whoa. He was speaking to Christine Schindler, who's our Catherine-based reporter, and she's been sharing all the action from the showgrounds with us this afternoon. Christine, I did want to ask about a certain event that is kicking off later this evening.
Love is in the air, everywhere I look around.
The Love Muster event. The inaugural Love Muster last year was an absolute hit. Hundreds of weddings have since sprouted. Nah, I'm just making that bit up. But it went really well. They're doing it again. What are you hearing about potential numbers for this unique muster?
Oh, I think they're a bit concerned that they just won't have enough space. I suggest that they spill out onto the main arena. I think that would everyone can watch, it's like spectator sport as well. It's looking out to be massive.
The ringers are coming in from far and wide.
Absolutely. And it's a bit of a special a one this year, I guess. Everyone is going to get a little card and they'll get some questions. And then on the back, they'll have some date ideas. I think it's going to be a bit of an interesting time. You can come watch. I think it's 7 p.m. at the Rodeo Bar, which is over near the Camp Draft Arena.
7 p.m. That's a good time to have it. There'll be just a few sherbets had prior, and I know everyone's just been encouraged not to ask boring questions.
Yes, yes. And there are some, yeah, there's those starter questions on the card, and good, then there's, you know, some date ideas. But I was talking to the girls who were organising it just maybe, I don't know, about 20 minutes just before I started talking to you, Matt. And they're wandering around promoting it, but they said the socials are just going off. They've got like hundreds of thousands of views and hundreds of thousands of shares, and they're not sure what's going to happen tonight. But yeah, a lot of people going to be there, that's for sure.
I won't ask about your own personal, you know, what you'll be doing at 7 p.m. I'll let you be on that. But thank you for taking us all to the Catherine Show this afternoon, Christine. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you, Matt. You too.
Enjoy it. There she is. It's Catherine Show Day. Get along to it.
Everywhere I look around, love is in the air. Every sight and every sound.
Back out into the Cattle Pavilion, a big congratulations to the Dyer family from Hayfield Station, who took out the champion pen of steers. And well done to Wave Hill Station, which was awarded the Reserve Champion Award. We might just play a little bit of Catherine's very own Toby Curtin, and I'll just make a quick phone call. I've got a feeling we can get a blue ribbon winner on the show. Stay tuned.
Swag's camp is coming alive. The smell of cooking from the old camp hut. Strong black tea and we saddle up. We ride out through the morning sun. Another long day, there's work to be done. Out in the stock camp, moving the mud. Working up a sweat, just a part of the job. When you're smack bang in the middle of the territory. That's okay by me. Out here rocking out a big road. You gotta be smack bang in the middle of the territory.
Smack bang in the middle of the territory. It's Catherine Show Day. I found a winner. Justin Dyer from Hayfield Station. The family's taken out the champion pen of steers this year. How are you feeling, sir?
Yeah, g'day, Matt. Yeah, it was great, great. A real thrill to take some steers into the show and pick up the first prize for the class. Yeah, just great.
The family haven't taken cattle in for a while. Tell us about why you were keen to get involved this year.
Well, we had a bit of pressure put on us to participate, and the stars just seemed to align this year. And we had the time, and so we thought, well, we better support it. It's a good great initiative by ABBA, and they get a lot of support from elders and RTA to do it, to put it on, and the exporters, of course. So, yeah, it's a good thing to get involved in.
Yeah, do you need to take these champion steers home, or has someone already got out the checkbook and bought them from you?
No, they had a sale after the judging, and everything sold really well, right through to, I think, top price was $355. I didn't put a reserve on them, but I was pretty happy with that rate, so we took it.
Yeah, I've got here that champion steers selling for $3.55. That's a good 10, 15 cents in front of the current LiveX job, yeah?
Excellent. That's great.
That's you've got a bit of pocket money for later on there.
I should have bought some more in.
And was there any family rivalry here? Because your sister and her partner, Brad, live just on the other side of the Stuart Highway. They've won blue ribbons, yes, in the past. Were they in the running this year?
They brought cattle into the showgrounds yards, mm-hmm, and they had some commercial cattle judge yesterday, and I'm pretty sure they picked up a ribbon of every color yesterday, and it was great to see Brad leading around one of his bulls in the commercial lead section today, and I think it took out his class as well. So it's they didn't have any steers in the in the Live X job. So there was no head-to-head competition, but I guess everyone was a winner.
That's a smart way of doing family business. I'll let you get back to it. Well done.
Thanks, man.
And say good day to Val for us.
Will do. Absolutely.
Good on you. Justin Dyer. He's a winner at the Catherine Show. It's now news time on your ABC 1 o'clock.
G'day, I'm Toby. I'm Cotton Dinner in Northern Territory. You're listening to The Country Hour.
Matthew Brand with you this afternoon. And I trust you well on this Friday lunchtime, this Catherine Show Day. In a moment, we'll be stepping out of the territory to get an update on the spread of fire ants across eastern Australia.
These super pests stand to inhabit at least 97% of this country, and they're projected to cause more damage than cane toads, camels, foxes and feral pigs all combined.
Well, that sounds awful. They are on the march, these fire ants. And already on the text line this afternoon, messages from you. This is coming through via the text 0487 991057. Merv says, Matt, I can recall relevant government officers from affected states sitting on their hands and doing nothing to eradicate fire ants over 20 years. Governments need to step up here with the will and the action to control these ants. And it should have been done earlier, says Merv, 0487 991057. I'll also be speaking to Bushfires NT in just a moment. There has been a fire danger period declaration this week for the Savannah region. And there's a couple of fires getting around, Bachelor and south of Catherine this afternoon as we go to air. So we'll just get an update on those fires as well. Let's go to the Weather Bureau before all of that. Sally Cutter's there this afternoon. How are you, Sally?
Oh, good. Not too bad, thanks.
Happy Catherine Show Day to you. What's the weather going to be like for the rest of today and tomorrow for those heading to the Catherine Showgrounds?
Well, we're looking at sunny conditions, top of 31, maybe a little chilly tonight with a minimum of 10, but that's not too bad. And the winds, we're looking at sort of southeasterly winds, 15 to 25 kilometres an hour, becoming light this afternoon. And then in tomorrow, light winds at the start of the day, and then increasing to 15 to 25 kilometres per hour in the morning, and then easing off again in the late afternoon. So it's not too bad, just enough breeze to help sort of keep yourself cool. But there's no rain, but it's going to be sunny.
Is that a fairly dry wind?
Yeah, it's pretty dry. We've had some dry air come into the southern parts of the NT, it's in the southern parts of the NT anyway, but southern parts of the top end, and that's just sort of gradually worked its way up. There was some fogs sort of just north of the Roper River this morning, and then you could actually see that all clear out on the satellite picture. So the dew points stand around about that 9.5 at the moment in Catherine.
Yeah, okay. And what about the weekend ahead for those in Central Australia and the Barkly?
Okay, weekend, still got those cold nights. The winds are easing off a little bit. All the action really starts on Monday. So tonight we're looking at another freezing night. We got down to -0.1 last night in Alice Springs, so another zero night tonight, 2 on Sunday. Then things really sort of start sort of happening on Monday. We've got the northerly winds developing, so it's going to be quite windy down through that, particularly the Leicester and up into the southern Tanami from the northerly wind, so they'll be going to be dry, fire danger is going to increase. But then we've got the change coming through on sort of overnight on Tuesday, and that's going to, overnight Monday into Tuesday, and then that's going to drop those temperatures and ease the winds off there. We will see the winds fluctuate as we go through next week. But the weekend is basically sunny, cold overnight, and the days not too bad, but they're not sort of overly hot or cold. We're looking 19 today, but 21s for Saturday, Sunday for Alice Springs.
Okay. Now, tell us a bit more about the potential of a northwest cloud band and moisture into the territory next week.
Yep. So we've sort of got two. We've got the trough that comes through that to Monday, Tuesday one, and it's going to be a weak cloud band, so there's a slight chance of seeing rain with that. But as we go through the week, Thursday, probably clearing off a bit on Friday, or starting to clear off on Friday, but Thursday is probably going to be the wettest day, and we could see, so forth, up to that. I'm still sticking by what I said yesterday, up to about 20 millimetres, but we could see that rain extending up into the Barkly. Only a moderate chance of showers, so you're not guaranteed anything. But as it clears, it's going to kick up further northwards across the sort of the central parts of the top end, and maybe into the southern parts of the territory, southern parts of the top end.
Okay. Now, did you just say up to 20 millimetres?
Per day, yeah.
Per day.
Not necessarily 20 millimetres each day. So you might get to 50 overall. So you might get 20 one day, 10 another, maybe another 20. But so up to 20, particularly down the southern end, the border regions, is where probably the heaviest falls are going to be. As you go further north, they're not quite as likely to be that heavy, but we could still see some reasonable rainfall.
Okay. And I'm only just questioning here because I felt like yesterday you said, you know, across the period of this event, some spots might get up to 50 millimetres. Is that still the case?
I'm still sticking by that.
Yeah, I like it. And I'm liking the confidence, Sally Cutter. If that were to happen, where's the most likely spot on the map that could receive that type of rainfall?
Probably so maybe in a band northern Leicester around to Alice Springs down into the Simpson. And I said up to 50.
Yes, no. 50, I'm not.
But up to 50?
Up to 50. I'm not trying to, you know, put words in your mouth here. Up to 50, potentially.
Yeah.
Whew. Rightio. Just finally, the weekend ahead for fishos. What do they need to be aware of?
Okay, still a little bit windy out there. If you're out on the west coast this afternoon, we're looking winds variable 10 knots this afternoon. Tomorrow, east to southeasterly winds 10 to 15 in the morning, and then become variable when the sea breeze starts messing with things. But we could see winds 15 to 20 knots on Sunday morning. That's the west coast. The east coast, we're looking at so today, southeasterly 15 to 20, reaching 25 knots offshore this morning. So they should be starting to ease back to that 15 to 20, and then 15 to 20 for the next couple of days. And out on the Arafura coastal waters, 15 to 20 today, tomorrow, and Saturday on Sunday.
No worries. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon. I'm looking forward to next week. And happy Catherine Show Day to you, Sally Cutter.
Thank you very much.
It is 12 past one on the Country Hour. I will be speaking to Bushfires NT soon. But up next on the Country Hour, let's talk about grass.
Grab the August issue of Gardening Australia for expert tips on growing kangaroo paw, bare-rooted ornamentals, eggplant and potted citrus. Plus, identify weedy plants, learn about potting mix and visit an urban food forest.
Our text number at the Country Hour is 0487 99 1057. Another message about fire ants. Someone here says, of all the pests in Australia, fire ants will be the worst. Nothing can live well where they prosper, says someone on the text line. And Brian in the Do this afternoon says, Matt, can you play Ringers from the Top End, Slim Dusty, if you get the time? Well, in my opinion, Brian, we should make the time for that.
I'm Lockie Bear. I'm from Monogeny Station in the Northern Territory. And you're listening to the ABC Country Hour.
I was once told by an absolute legend of the NT cattle industry that if you're out of grass, you're out of business. And it's pretty true, isn't it? And it's probably why a bunch of cattle producers and station hands went along to the Grazing Fundamental Edge workshop this week. Charles Geary, he went along as well and caught up with Range IQ Managing Director Dione Walsh, who led the workshop.
So unfortunately, there definitely is some classroom work, which of course is everyone's joy, but we do get outside. So we'll actually go and do some plant identification work. We'll also look at how much feed a cow actually needs to eat every day to get good production. And then later in the day, we're going to go and have some fun in the paddock and work out how much grass is in the paddock by using a range of techniques that can be used anywhere once people get home.
Now, the land in Central Australia and the Barkly are obviously quite unique. What are some of those bits of information that you are looking to pass on to better cattle production?
Well, one of the key things is just the way the rain falls, especially in Central Australia. It's highly variable rainfall from year to year, and that has a direct impact on how much feed grows for cattle. So a big part of this morning's course is about understanding how feed grows in Central Australia and what you can do to, I guess, give yourself the best chance of managing that feed really well, regardless of what sort of season you're having.
Why is it important for Centralian pastoralists to have that understanding of the connection between land condition and animal production?
Really, good land condition grows more feed, and the more feed you can grow, the more kilos of beef you can produce. And if you can do that year after year after year, you're going to have a more stable income as well. So the actual revenue from the cattle enterprise is going to be more dependable over time. And we find that producers that have been in the region a long time understand this stuff really, really well. But what we're really trying to do here is help those people who are new to the region or new to the industry to understand these concepts.
And we were chatting earlier, you've been doing this in Central Australia for a little bit now. What are some of those lessons that have been learned?
Just how special Central Australia is. We don't have a clear wet season and dry season like other parts of Northern Australia. And the other beauty about Central Australia is the grass that does grow is really good quality, and it retains the quality over a long period of time. So a lot of people are jealous about people in the top end because so much grass grows, but generally the quality of that grass is lower than it is in Central Australia. And there's a lot of really strong points about the industry down here that I think have been hidden under a bit of a bushel over a long period of time. So it's great for me to see that Central Australian producers really value the highlights of the production system that they operate in. And it's really special to them, and it's certainly special to me.
You talk about the value that Centralian pastoralists put on this knowledge and these sessions as well. And we're seeing that reflected today. There's a lot of young station hands at this station who would have been brought here by their employers. Is it good to see that continued acknowledgement of how important this is for young station hands and people new to working in these areas?
I am really enthusiastic about it. It's so inspiring to me to see so many young people at courses like this. And there's more courses being offered to younger people in Central Australia than there's ever been before. And I really take my hat off to the employers who send staff here, because it's not a cheap exercise to have them away from the property for a couple of days and their accommodation and travel and also the course costs. So it is a significant investment in their staff and their young people. And I really tip my hat to those employers who give the young people these opportunities.
And finally, at the end of this day, the people here will obviously walk away with buckets of new information. How are you hoping they'll implement it when they get back to the station after the long drive back from Alice Springs?
Well, I think most people that come to courses like this do go home quite invigorated and excited and want to change a lot of things. But my advice to them would be just choose one thing that's a manageable change and something that you can have control and ownership over. Because if you get those early wins in your career and make a positive change to make something better, it just stands you in good stead for the rest of your career, and it makes you a more valuable employee as well. So don't necessarily try and change the whole world at once. Just change some small things for a start. Get your skills and confidence up, and that will stand you in good stead for the rest of your career.
That is Deone Walsh from Range IQ speaking to Charles Geary at this Grazing Fundamental Edge workshop that was held yesterday. There's a beef up forum happening today in Alice Springs. I'm sure you'll be hearing more about that on Monday's Country Hour.
It's a solar farm, wind farm and a battery farm, and it was the first of its kind in the world. How did it end up in a small town in outback Queensland? Find out on Landline, Sunday 12:30 on ABC TV and iView.
It is 19 past one and you are tuned into the Country Hour. We're joined now by David Brenmore, who's the Incident Controller for Bushfires NT. How are you this afternoon, David?
Good afternoon, Matt. How are you going?
I'm not too bad. Bushfires NT's got some advices out for a blaze south of Katherine and one near Batchelor. What can you tell us?
Oh, okay. So one in Breswick, which is being managed by the landholders, is being contained at the moment, and we don't have any concerns over that one. So that advice will be changing this afternoon.
Good.
And the Batchelor job is also being contained. We had some really good overnight recovery. That started yesterday. Overnight recovery was good in terms of fire management. So that's been controlled. There's inactive fire edge there, and we've just put some backburning operations in place just in case there is any creep ahead of Sunday's fire weather day.
Yeah, tell us more about Sunday. The weather conditions might not be too favourable.
Yeah, look, we've just noticed a significant change in the fire danger ratings for Darwin and the Adelaide River Fire District. We are expecting it to be pretty dry during the day, but we're also expecting some strong gusty winds, some in some parts above 40 k's an hour. And really low humidity in that sort of 15 to 20%. So fire has the potential to be quite intense and fast moving. So we are worried about that. We're sort of suggesting that if you're heading out camping over the weekend, then you make sure that you're camping in a cleared area and that your campfire is completely extinguished before you leave.
Also this week, David, a fire danger period declaration was made for the Savannah Fire Management Zone. Can you tell our audience what that is, what it means?
Yeah, certainly. So through a process of data analysis, looking at fuel types and conditions and the weather conditions, we've decided to include the Savannah into the fire danger period. That means that for that region that a permit is required to burn. And that anyone that's undertaking any of those burning activities cannot leave that burn before it's thoroughly extinguished.
Okay. Well, all the best for that weekend period. I'm just looking at the NAFIA website and, gee, touch wood. You think of like the Stuart Highway from Maryfield Cattle Station, you know, or go even further south from Dunmara all the way up to Darwin, touch wood. The fire map's looking pretty kind for this time of the year, isn't it? Touch wood.
Look, it is. It is looking good, but we have seen an increase year to date in fire activity. So for the same period last year, Bushfires Northern Territory attended about 300 incidents. So for the same period this year, we're at 336. So there has been an increase.
Thanks for all your work. Have a good afternoon.
Righto. Thanks, Matt.
David Bredmore, Incident Controller at Bushfires NT. Let's talk about fire ants next.
G'day, I'm Gavin Howie from Turf NT out at Middle Point. Welcome to the Country Hour.
In the United States, invasive fire ants are a permanent plague, swarming backyards and overwhelming ecosystems. And now Australia is in a race to stop the same thing from happening here. Experts say we're at a tipping point, and some fear that perhaps we've already lost this battle. Dominic Cansdale reports.
They've marched 150 million hectares across 15 US states.
Some entomologists have referred to this perpetual insecticidal war and management plan against fire ants in the US as the Vietnam of entomology. It just seems like an intractable problem.
Entomologist Mark Hoddle has spent decades studying fire ants at the University of California. He says the failure to stop this invasive species in the US risks being repeated here.
When there is not sufficient collective action for the public good, the programs collapse.
In Australia, the $500 million eradication program is under pressure. Fire ants have jumped containment lines in southeast Queensland, pushing into northern New South Wales. In recent weeks, nests were detected at a coal mine near Mackay and in a freight container at Perth.
This roadside was treated by council with growth regulator.
But on the front lines in Queensland's scenic rim, landholders say they're fighting alone.
From the first nest on my property in 2010 to today, from one nest to about 1,000 nests a year.
Kirsty McKenna's property falls within Queensland's suppression zone, where residents are responsible for eradicating infestations on their properties themselves.
They're continuing to just breed and reinfest. You're always just beating them back.
The invasive pest kills native insects, injures livestock and pets, and in rare cases can cause fatal anaphylactic shock in humans.
And look at them just swarming in there. And they just keep coming out.
Turf farmer John Kellier has spent more than $1 million trying to control fire ants on his property near Bow Desert. But he says it's pointless when neighbours aren't doing their part.
That pest population of ants that's there is endemic. They're mating, they're flying onto my land, and I'm having to deal with the problem.
The National Fire Ant Eradication Program's General Manager, Marnie Manning, says it has taken these criticisms on board. It plans to expand suppression efforts as part of a $24 million funding boost from the Queensland Government.
We are not giving up on eradication, and we ask people, please, let us in, talk to us about getting this done, because the last thing we want to do is be remembered as the people who allowed fire ants to become established here.
She says despite recent outbreaks, the eradication of fire ants is not only possible but necessary.
These super pests stand to inhabit at least 97% of this country, and they're projected to cause more damage than cane toads, camels, foxes and feral pigs all combined.
But experts like Mark Hoddle say the ants may become a permanent part of the landscape, just like the US.
It's been estimated the ant may cost billions of dollars in economic losses each year, sucks up an immense amount of resources, it's ongoing, and it'll probably never be winnable with the technology we're currently using.
Big thanks to Dominic Cairnsdale for that update on the March of Fire Ants. Bit of a scary update. You can read more about it via the ABC Rural website this afternoon. Got a message here from Alan on 0487991057 that says, Matt, I messaged you a few years ago about the seriousness of the continued progression of these fire ants. Alan says the federal, state, territory governments and others involved in decision-making to address and wipe out these pests should be held liable for failing to eradicate them. You wait until families and their pets can't go out into their backyards or go camping for fear of getting bitten. What a cluster of enormous proportions just waiting to explode, says Alan this afternoon via our text line. And I think I mentioned someone else here saying that out of all the pests in Australia, fire ants will be the worst. Nothing can live well where they prosper. We don't have them in the territory yet, thank goodness. But, my goodness, what a scary prospect. Hey, Brian from The Do, this was a great idea of yours.
I'm a ringer from the top end, where you gotta know your job and what you're doing each day. On 2 million acres, you bet you'll have to earn your pay. If you want to take it on, there's one thing that shouldn't be forgotten. Nobody else can do the job like a ringer from the top end. Out on the fence line, swallowing dust, blood on my hands from the bar, hoping that road bull won't see the hole before they get him in the yard. But I get a funny feeling in the middle of my back. Sure enough, he's coming like a train down the track. That's when nobody else moves faster than the ringer from the top end.
Look out now! Look out! Plenty of ringers in Catherine this afternoon for Love Muster. Wishing them all of the best. A
That's it for today's Country Hour. If you've missed any of our stories this week, you can catch it via the podcast. I'll leave you with Slim Dusty. Keep it rural.
I'm a ringer from the top end, where you got a muster 3,000 head in a day.